Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. This program is devoted to those of you who know that the world's political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions are rotten to the core, that they are the problem, and that they are not the solution. Therefore, there will never be a religious, political, or military solution that will ail anything that is destroying our world. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines to know who is perpetrating the crimes and why they are doing so, which over the course of the next 15 years will wreak havoc on our planet. And as a result, in our second hour, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore the Torah, because its covenant provides the only reliable answer. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. I had promised quite some time ago that I would review a book written by John Hagee. It's called The Four Blood Moons, and we're going to do so this morning. John Hagee is the pastor of Cornerstone Church. A pastor is already a strike against him. Church is a second strike against him. God does not have clergy working for him. If you are a pastor, if you are a priest, you are working for the wrong team. As for church, there is no basis for church anywhere in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. There's not even a basis for the church in the false Christian New Testament. It is a pagan term. It's the name of a pagan sun goddess. And the word that appears in Greek means called out. It is a translation of the word that was actually used, which is perhaps one of the most essential words ever spoken by God, mikra, which are the invitations to meet with God. The mikra represent Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, and Sukkah. They are the seven steps that we walk to God. In fact, it's interesting that this man who has a church is wholly ignorant of the meaning and purpose of the mikra. He is a best-selling author. He's the founder of the John Hagee Ministries and the Christians United for Israel. What's interesting, of course, is that his promotion is of Paul and Pauline Christianity. And Paul was a raging anti-Semite, but somehow he doesn't see the conflict in any of that. Now, this particular article that was written, it's not an article, it's a puff piece, written by one of John Hagee's staffers, said that he has written an astonishing new nonfiction book called Four Blood Moons, which draws on scripture. No, it doesn't. NASA science and recorded history. If you want to know when there's going to be an eclipse or when there was an eclipse, you can Google it. You don't have to go to NASA. There's lots of sites that show eclipses. To assume that, to try to credit your work, and by the way, most of this is plagiarized from another Christian's work, by saying, boy, it's based on NASA science, is to say that a web page that shows when full eclipses have occurred is really science from NASA. And recorded history, of course, he misses every important date according to Yahweh. And to explore the significance of astronomical events and to caution believers of a momentous upcoming series of lunar events that may directly impact not only the nation of Israel, but possibly all of mankind. Now, think about this for a moment. This is the same guy that says, you know, I'm going to give you the sun and the moon, the greater and lesser light, as a means for you to know and understand the Moed, that which are the Mikra, the meetings with God. And he talks about in the fourth day, the greater light becoming visible to us, which is when the first four Moed were fulfilled. And he has no clue as to any of that. But beyond using the sun and the moon to establish the timing of the Moed Mikra, God says, don't use them. Don't look to the sun, the moon, and the stars, because if you do, then you're going to be like all the pagan religions of yesteryear. Don't do that. And yet, Here is this numbskull doing it. So that you know, John Hagee is out of San Antonio, Texas, one of the largest cities in America. I think it's in the top 10, as a matter of fact. He heads a non-denominational evangelical congregation of about 19,000 members. I picked up just a couple of quick quotes from John Hagee. He has a page of John Hagee quotes that he encourages people around the world to use. The first of them is, the church today, again, there is no association between church and God. The church is tied exclusively to the pagan religions of yesteryear. It is the name of Shersh, the daughter of Helios in the Teutonic religions. And it you will never find anything remotely close to church. Even in the Greek eyewitness accounts, it isn't there. They use ecclesia to translate mikra. And he says, the church today is riddled with fad doctrines and new sounds that distract from the clear message of the Great Commission in the New Testament. Yes, he is a New Testament fellow. Now, as we know, if you study Yirmiyahu, there is no New Testament. There is not even a New Covenant. There never will be a New Testament. There never will be a New Covenant. Now, the covenant will be renewed, and it will be reaffirmed, and when it is, it will be based entirely on what Christians would call the Old Testament, the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. But this man is fixated only on the new one, which is 50% written by Paul. Any message that distracts or that attracts you, which does not bring glory to Christ, is a message of a seducing spirit, and the man giving it is in deception. So the purpose of sharing the New Testament is to bring glory to Christ. Now, Christ here is used as if it was a name. It doesn't say the Christ as if it were a title. So it's a name, but there is no name of any individual associated with God named Christ. Christos isn't even a proper translation of his title, because it means to apply drugs. And his title is a Hebrew title. This man is going to write a book, has written a book, on what he calls the Hebrew holy days, and he doesn't even know that Christ is a bogus title. The last thing that Yahusha, his real name, the Masiyah, which means the work of Yah, and Yah saves, the last thing that he was interested in doing was bringing glory to himself. That would be the absolute last thing on his agenda. And so why would he want us to do what he himself did not do? And what is it possible that Christians could be any dumber? Yahusha, who is Yahweh in diminished corporeal form, came to draw our attention to and fulfill the means to approach Yahweh. That's it. He came to enable the promises of the covenant, which means that he had to fulfill the first four Moed Mikre. He was always pointing our attention to Yahweh. And Yahweh does not want us to bring glory to him. It's the opposite of his plan. He wants to bring glory, honor, power, enrichment to his covenant children. He can glorify us. He can make us powerful, enriched, perfect. He can glorify us. He can adorn us in light. We can't glorify him. We can thank him. We can appreciate what he's done. But the man's perspective is a seducing spirit of deception. The next quote is, do you ever wonder what it would be like to visit a New Testament church? So we're going to reemphasize this, that New Testament and church are all in direct conflict with Yahweh and his Torah. What do you think it would be like to visit a New Testament church service? I imagine it would be a far cry from our stately sanctuaries with their crystal chandeliers and their misty mauve carpets. So he's talking about that in the future, that there is this perfect New Testament church, and there's going to be worship services in this New Testament church, and how different it's going to be than the worship services on Sunday pagan holidays in his church. The ideal is that God is going to have nothing but a New Testament, when in fact that's the opposite of what God actually says. His next quote is, Paul never developed a negative attitude. Paul condemned and besmirched everyone. In fact, Paul was so negative that at the end of his life, he wrote Timothy and said, you know, you're it. Everyone else has abandoned me. Paul was in war against Yahusha, Yahweh, Yahusha's disciples, Jews in general, Yehudim. He hated everyone. They've never developed a negative attitude. There is no one in recorded history who has a more consistently negative attitude than does Paul. Then believing that that Paul, in fact, fulfilled the suffering that completed the suffering that he claims Yahusha could not bear himself. He said that Paul picked up his bloody body out of the dirt and went back into the city where he had almost been stoned to death. And they said, hey, about that sermon, I didn't finish preaching. Here it is. Yeah, Paul was determined to preach his sermon. It's just too bad that Paul's sermons were the antithesis of Yahweh's sermons. Well, now that we have a little clue as to who this deceiver is, known as John Hagee, when we return to Shattering Myths after the break, we're going to read his promotion, his synthesis of four blood moons. And I'm going to demonstrate for you just how foolish this man really is. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the commercial break. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're doing something we very seldom do on this program, which is to criticize another writer's work. But this book was brought to my attention by a good friend who seemed to think that the statistical probabilities that he brought out in his book were so powerful that he must be right, that they're just... was no way of explaining the great improbability of what he predicted occurring. And the person who brought this to my attention, very smart man, he's a good friend, and no matter how I attempted to reason with him, I said, there's literally nothing here. I was unable to prevail, so I promised that I would do this show on the four blood moons. So here we go. This is the Hagee gang has to say about their own book. Four Blood Moons derives its title from full lunar eclipses called blood moons because only the infrared band of light gets around the Earth, making the moon appear red. Yeah, it's a little more than that. It's the same reason that sunsets are red. The red wavelength is the longest of the wavelengths, and therefore it is easier to bend. And therefore, when the sun falls beneath the horizon, the blue-colored wavelengths, being shorter, don't bend, but the reds do bend, and therefore we see the sunsets in the warm colors. That's the same reason that the bent light of the sun, as it goes around the Earth, covers the surface of the moon during a lunar eclipse. The fact that they're called blood moons is only because red is the color of blood. There's no blood associated with them other than they're red. Reddish, if you will. In some centuries, there is a very rare series of four consecutive blood moons called a tetrad by astronomers. The fact is that they aren't rare. Blood moon, first of all, eclipses, every full eclipse is a blood moon. Every full eclipse is, and they're very seldom called blood moons. They're called by science full eclipses. But every full eclipse has the reddish color. So there's nothing special about a blood moon. There's nothing special about lunar eclipses. There are lots of years where there are, where over a course of 2 years, there would be four eclipses. That's not even all that uncommon. So here we go. He next says, according to Hege, tetrads have occurred on the Hebrew holy days of Passover and Sukkah only three times in the last 500 years. The effect is that Passover and Sukkot, and it's actually Sukkah, and it's if you're going to use the Hebrew name on one, why would you use the English translation of one and a corrupt transliteration of the other? I mean, you're either going to call both of them by their Hebrew names, it's Pesach and Sukkah, or you're going to call one by both of them by a translated version. Pesach means Passover, and Sukkah means shelters. But chose the lack of understanding of these boys to call one by a transliteration and not the other. It says that they've only occurred three times in the last 500 years. Well, since it isn't relevant at all and nothing has occurred that is significant in Yah's plan in the last 500 years, nothing, why even bring it up? And by the way, it isn't Hege that found this 5 years ago. Another Christian author who we'll consider at the end of this segment is the one that actually wrote about this, providing all the detail that Hege would later plagiarize. Now, he goes on to say, or his group goes on to say, these same three dates in Israel's history just happen to be the most important dates for the nation, which is absolutely not true. I mean, the claim is ludicrous. It is factually untrue, writes Hege. Four Blood Moons discusses these three incredible historical events in detail. All right, here's the first of them. His first of them, by the way, is not 33 CE, of course, because he doesn't go back that far, because the book that he was plagiarizing doesn't go back that far. And because there is no correlation between a blood moon, a full eclipse, and what happened in year 4000, year 33 CE. And by the way, there's a reason that that eclipses, full eclipses, therefore blood moons, occur on Pesach and again on Sukkah. That is because Pesach and Matzah and Bukurim are always celebrated during a full moon. It's the 14th day of the month. And 14th, 15th, 16th, always celebrated on a full moon. And the same thing is true with Sukkah, which is the 15th day of the month. We'll return in a moment. Now listen to John Hagee's first justification for his pattern. It reads, in 1493, not in in 33 CE, which is the most important year, which is year 4000 Yah in recorded history. No, but in 1493, the four blood moons occurred on the Hebrew holidays. Of course, they're not Yah was Mikra. He's all about church and not about Mikra, not about Yahweh's invitations to meet with God. They're to call them Hebrew holidays is okay. So they were written to us in the Hebrew language. That would mean that the language that in which something was written determines what they are or whom they belong to. If he means Hebrew in the sense of Jewish, then he's also falsely attributing these days. And they aren't holidays. They're invitations to meet with God. So anyway, he talks about the four blood moons in 1493 occurred on the Hebrew holidays of Passover and the Feast of Tabernacles. This signified the beginning of the fall of Spain following the expulsion of the Jews a year earlier and was God's announcement to the world God's announcement to the world that the mantle of prosperity had thus been placed on the shoulders of the infant nation that would become the United States. Since it became a refuge for the Jewish people. I mean, imagine it. First of all, the blood moons here, and you'll notice the pattern, they're late. They occurred after the event. The Jewish expulsion took place the year prior. And so he's attributing this in arrear. So that God is using a sign, his prophecies are now prophetic witnesses and signs are after the fact. Oh, in case you missed it, oh, by the way, a year ago you were expelled. And then, what, 270 plus years, 280 years before a nation would be founded called the United States. In almost 300 years, he is attributing this to saying that God is making an announcement by his belated blood moons. In 1493, he's making an announcement that the mantle of prosperity had been put squarely on the shoulders of an infant nation that would be conceived 300 years later. That's the United States. This is God's telling us, oh, I'm blessing you, baby. You're it. I'm going to have these blood moons here because I'm going to bless you. Wow. Talk about delusional. And by the way, he talks about these being the four most important dates in the history of Israel. And yet there were no blood moons to signify any aspect of the rise of the Nazis, the fall of the Nazis, the beginning of the concentration camp era. And my friends, last time I checked, the fall of Spain did not lead to the establishment of Israel or the return of the Jewish people. It did not lead to the founding of the United States. But the Holocaust, it absolutely and unequivocally led to the formation of the nation of Israel as we see it today and the return of the Jewish people. And yet, there were no blood moons to commemorate that event. So there's nothing whatsoever to mark any aspect of the rise and fall of Nazism or any marker of the Holocaust, which were infinitely and actually related to the formation of Israel and the return of the Jews, and yet he has this belated event and attributes things to it that neither of which have any bearing on anything. Now, he writes that the second appearance of four blood moons occurring on the Hebrew holy days was 1949 and 1950. They occurred on Passover and the Feast of Tabernacles and coincided with Israel being declared a nation. You notice he has to lie. Israel was declared a nation in 1948. It wasn't declared a nation in 1949 or 1950. The Israeli Muslim wars that were fought, the Israeli War of Independence was fought in 1948, was not fought in 1949 or 1950. All of the battles came to a conclusion before the end of 1948. And while 1948 was important, these blood moons occurred in 1949 and 1950. What are we getting into? A god that plays horseshoes now? A god of hand grenades? A god of, well, that was somewhat close. Okay, so it was a year, 2 years late. And so it was in arrears. Hey, but, you know, I was close. Nice try, pal. Here's the truth about the four blood moons, by the way, that he picks up. This was supposed to be the sign for Israel. Well, you know where the center of the eclipse was for the 1949 blood moon, the 413 blood moon, Pesach? Amazon. Guess where it was not visible? Israel. On 10-7-1949, which again is after Israel became a nation, and after is long after Israel was declared a nation, of Sukkah. Do you know where that moon, that eclipse was centered and where it could not be seen. It was centered in the Amazon again. Could not be seen in Israel. 4-2-1950, a full year after Israel had been, 2 years after Israel had been declared a nation. It was barely visible in Israel, but its center was Madagascar. And the last one, 9-26-1950, not visible in Israel, was centered on the Amazon. Yep. If the man had just taken a moment to say, wait a minute, how am I going to attribute a sign, which God provides a sign in advance, not in arrears, and this is 1 in 2 years in arrears, to an event, and it's attributable, that he claims, to Israel, and 3 of the 4 can't even be seen in Israel, and the other one is centered on Madagascar. I mean, how bright do you have to be to say, you know, is your God that clumsy? He can't. You know, Hagee will say that this is literally the hand of God manipulating these astronomical bodies to create these signs. What's this, God got Parkinson's? The third, he will go on to say, occurrence was in 1967 and 1968, when the Six-Day War took place, uniting the city of Jerusalem for the first time in 2,000 years. By the way, it did not unite the city of Jerusalem. The city of Jerusalem remained divided. It's just that Jews had access to portions of Jerusalem. But General Dion gave the Temple Mount, which is the only aspect of Jerusalem that really matters to Yahweh, he gave it to the Muslims. And he says that is the third occurrence of these powerful signs in the most important days in Israel, the 1967 and 1968 Six-Days War. So God is now the God of war. He is God. But, you know, I'm not a wizard in math. Decent in math, but as the name implies, a Six-Day War does not transpire over 2 years. Moreover, what is the value of a sign after the fact? This is the third time that the sign, which were these eclipses, which are a pagan sign, by the way, were after the event. And once again, God was clumsy. The 4-24-1967 eclipse, not visible in Israel. It's centered on New Zealand. The 10-18-1967 eclipse, not visible in Israel. It's centered on Hawaii. 4-13-1968 eclipse, not visible in Israel. It's centered on the Amazon. 10-6-1968 eclipse. By the way, we're over a year after the Six-Day War. Not visible in Israel. It's centered on Hawaii. The Six-Day War, which is called Nazca from Arabic, meaning the setback, is the war of 1967. It was fought in June of 1967. From June 5th to June 10th, 1967. Boy, what a mess. All right, here's the man's prediction. So all of that, which is all rubbish now, I mean, just complete, absolute. He's got a God that has intervened and used his hand to manipulate astronomical events to tell us absolutely nothing other than he's a fumbler. Has really lousy aim. And he doesn't know what's important. And he's belated. He's been sleeping on the job and kind of barely awoke to say, all right, I'm gonna miss the big events, but I'm going to get these other events, but I'm going to tell you about them and warn you about them a year after they happen. He says, what's more? The next 4 blood moon tetrad falling on the same Hebrew holy days is set to occur starting in April 2014, only the 4th time in the last 500 years. The dates are April 15th, 2014. Actually, Passover is on the 13th of April that year, not on the 15th. It's off by 2 days. Oops. The next, he says, is October 8th, 2014, the Feast of Tabernacles. Actually, Tabernacles is occurring on the 9th. Then he says it's April 4th, 2015, which is Passover, and actually Passover occurs on the 2nd in 2015. God's not very accurate, I guess. And then we have September 28th of 2015, the Feast of Tabernacles. He's only off by a day there. Occurs on the 27th. So much, however, for them being a sign from God regarding Israel. Now, I'm hoping that this man, but I don't think it's in him, will, when 2014, next year, transpasses and nothing material happens relative to God's work in with Israel, and 2015 passes, that he'll say, you know, I should have plagiarized a different book. I was looking in the wrong place. I'm all wrong. I apologize for this. Everyone who bought that book, return it to me. I'll trash it and I'll return your money. Now, there's more to say on this subject, and we'll consider it when Shattering Myths continues after the upcoming commercial break. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're considering the idiocy of John Hagee in his book, The Four Blood Moons. Now, he speaks of these tetrads as being uncommon, and that they very seldom occur in back-to-back years, with his four blood moons occurring in successive years. Well, actually, they are very common. There are 12 blood moons, and between 2014 and 2022. There were two in 2000 and two in 2001. By the way, he didn't speak of those, but that was a tetrad of four blood moons over the course of 2 years. From May 16th of 2003 to October 28th of 2004, there were four total lunar eclipses and thus four complete blood moons. So that's 2 years, same thing. There were also two in each of 2007, March 3rd and August 28th, and two in 2008, February 21st and August 16th. Five have occurred between June 26, 2010 and June 4th, 2012. Now, I have chronicled all of the blood moons between now and 2036, just out of curiosity. The vast preponderance of them are not visible in Israel. And the only ones that would be of interest to us is what occurs in 2026, when is the most likely date for the harvest of Teruah. There is one in June 26th, 2029, but it is not visible in Israel and doesn't coincide. It cannot, of course, coincide with Teruah, because Teruah is the first day of the month, which means it is very close to a new moon. Then there is one in 2033. It is visible in Israel, although it is centered on India, and it's on April 14th, and then on October 8th. So, you know, coinciding with the period of time around Pesach, and coinciding with the period of time around Sukkah. April 14th and October 8th, there are, in 2033, there are two of these full eclipses. One is visible in Israel, centered on India. The second is visible, not visible in Israel, centered on the central Pacific. It does coincide with Sukkah. Now, Hagee continues to write. After the first two blood moons in the sequence, and before the final two blood moons, will be a solar eclipse on March 20th, 2015, Rosh Hashanah. Now, I'm here to tell you, Rosh Hashanah cannot occur on March 20th. Rosh Hashanah is in the seventh month. It can never occur in March. It's astonishing that a man this ignorant of the Torah would write a book. He says, what is the prophetic significance of these events? He says, over the past 500 years, these lunar events are all falling on the holy days. We're an announcement. By the way, these are holy days according to Hagee here. And by the way, they're not. They're set apart. And yet he doesn't observe any of them. They're all proclaimed in the Torah, and yet he ignores all of them. Anyway, it says over the past 500 years, these lunar events all falling on the holy days were an announcement of a time of tears and tribulations that ended in tremendous national triumph for the Jewish people. That's not true. There is no correlation between what happened in Spain and triumph for the Jewish people. And 1949 and 1950, it was just the beginning of a whole series of wars, but it was after the fact, as was the 1967 war. Stunningly stupid here. There are no solar lunar accidents, he writes. So he says there are no solar, there are no solar of lunar accidents, whatever that means. Every heavenly body is controlled by the unseen hand of God to send signals to humanity of coming events. That's a quote, says Hagee. So the universe, it does not operate according to physics. No. It's the unseen hand of God that takes our sun and takes our planet and takes the moon and says, okay, here you go. You're going to line up. I'm doing it. It's not an accident. No, it's the unseen hand of God that's manipulating these things. This is the mighty manipulator of Christianity, the God that's involved in everything. And it's signaling, he says, upcoming events, and yet every one of these signs was in arrears after the events. In Four Blood Moons, Hagee cautions that while no one knows the mind of God, I beg to differ. The anticipation of these events does tell us that God is getting ready to do something to change the course of human history. We'll be back in a moment.